Welcome to the Design Thinking Roundtable. I'm Anne-Laure Fayard, an ethnographer studying social innovation. In this series, Social Innovators in Residence, I converse with passionate and inspiring social innovators who are visiting us at the ERA Chair in Social Innovation and the DESIS Lab at Nova SBE. Today, I'm delighted to be in conversation with Karine Sarkissian, a founding partner at Tamar Capital, a single-family office where she oversees the impact and venture portfolio. Designer and design strategist by background, Karine has extensive experience in social innovation for urban and economic development initiatives within New York City and internationally. Leveraging her expertise, she co-founded Le Studio as part of Tamar Capital to actively support portfolio companies and investors through design, impact measurement, and strategy development. Karine is an activist for women's rights and strongly believes in representing people's voices that are silenced. Karine, thank you for agreeing to chat with me today. I would like to start with two topics that emerge as two connected threads when I was looking at your experience and projects. There's design and there's impact. And I wonder if you could tell me a bit more about each of these. So if we start, for example, with design, how did you first start doing design and what type of design?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for hosting me. I'm super excited to be here and to be chatting in person. It's been a while. Yeah, it's a great question. So I guess I'll kind of track back a little bit to a little bit about my background, where I'm from, my history. So my family is Lebanese Armenian, and I grew up between Saudi Arabia and Lebanon. So it was really in sort of communities and societies that had really been impacted by the political climate. And a lot of women's rights maybe were like suppressed in different ways. So for me, it sort of started with finding ways to really exercise my voice, or in some ways understand who I was and find my voice. And so I really resorted, first and foremost, to art as a medium and as a form of communication. And so I studied sculpture initially at school, and I was like really fascinated by creating things that were installations in the built environment. And as I started thinking about what that could look like career-wise for later in my life, realistically, I started realizing, okay, so all the installations I was creating were impacting the built environment in some way or another. So you were interacting with the sculpture or the piece, and it was, you know, the result that it had on an emotional and even on a personal basis with a lot of people that went through it was something I was really fascinated about. So I started sort of shifting to a major at school called environmental design, which was basically sustainability and spatial design. And so my focus became sort of urban design and urban planning, because I realized, I mean, the way we move through cities, the way we move through the environment says so much about the culture of a place and really the impact that we have on the history that we're a part of and the memories and the different, you know, political and economical layers that a city has to bring. So I guess I started exploring this design in different capacities, and I really got exposed to design thinking at school. So, you know, the strategies around design thinking, the processes, and I was fascinated as like really using design in every capacity in my life. I mean, it was like a way of thinking that I had like completely discovered and I found like was fascinating. So after college, you know, I was exposed to architecture. I worked in an architecture office for about 3 years and started, you know, doing a lot of volunteering opportunities. This is how you and I met, Anne-Laure, through Open IDEO and running those chapters together and really understanding, okay, there's design encompasses kind of a broad array of things. I then switched to, I joined this company called 3x3, which is an urban planning consultancy based in Brooklyn. And we started working across the different boroughs in New York City, and it was honestly incredible. I really saw design in its full capacities mm-hmm. being expanded. So we worked on different aspects, different clients. Some were civil servants. Some had to do with the mayor's office. An example that I know we spoke about a while ago was we did the research for a women's building, developing that in New York City. And I mean, that was just fascinating. And so I started realizing, okay, so design actually is not only about the final product, but it has actually so much more in the process. Mm-hmm. And so from everything from like research and going on the ground and talking with communities and actually taking a step at continuing to listen to people's voices. So from finding my own to actually being a champion to others, I thought that was so interesting. So research, synthesis, talking to different stakeholders, giving voice to the different kinds of beneficiaries was really my journey with impact and, sorry, with design, and understanding that there is something core to this strategy and to this way of thinking. And it really became core to the work I did. And in general, like any kind of interest I pursued, were always back coming back to design as the way and or as the mode of
interaction.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's really interesting because you switch between design and impact. But I think that if you look at the different projects you worked on as a designer, a design strategist, you can see how there's always a strong focus on social and environmental issues, and like how, you know, partly with the last types of work you've been doing with 3x3 and also the work we did, you know, with Open IDEO, there's really always this idea of like, how can we impact and give voice to people? And so, you know, community-centered design and all of these things. And so, you know, it's I'm sure you've heard that question a lot. Okay, how did you go from, you know, this kind of very community grounded, you know, field work, and you highlighted how, you know, excited you were about the kind of the groundwork, to your current role as an impact investor, but still an investor. And I know you told me that at the beginning it was like kind of a hard shift of identity. And so, and how did it change, if it had, your view of impact?
Yeah, I mean, great questions. I think you stressed on something that maybe I didn't emphasize on, but I mean, with 3x3, really like the touch of community and community-centered design, as we called it, sort of this process of like working so closely with people, I was really, really like scared, like you mentioned, to step away from that and then, you know, think about starting a family office. But I had to think sort of longevity-wise as this opportunity presented itself. I mean, I have to say I'm very, very lucky to have been given this chance to, first of all, work with my brothers, which was something I honestly dreamed of for so long. And then really understand that we could create this platform, like in a very unique way. I mean, so to give some background, so in 2016, my brothers and I launched a single family office called Tamar Capital. And they were initially based in Beirut. Now they're based in London. And I was based in New York. And now I'm based in San Francisco. But like understanding that there was an opportunity across these different continents or across these different areas that we could, you know, sort of shape and look at, you know, using that starting point as an opportunity to create something. So, yes, we decided to be investors, which was very difficult for me. I was like, that doesn't really describe me. I don't really have a background in finance, but I worked a lot with people. I worked with people. I was a researcher, so, and a strategist. So I sort of understood, okay, I'm decently good at reading people. And a lot of what investing comes down to is working very closely with founders and reading sort of the room, understanding their passions, understanding what they're focused on. And so I remember talking to my brother about this, and he said, you know, we have a true opportunity here. And I think this is the part that's most excited about a family office, is that unlike a regular venture capital, I mean, that's like larger or, you know, has different goals, we were directly aligned to the values that we have as a family. So innovation, you know, our parents have always been very innovative in what they've done, and really like leaders in their different industries. And then we were like, okay, we have an opportunity to promote innovation. We have an amazing opportunity to promote, you know, development and amazing opportunities across the world. And so really when I joined full time, I told my brothers, I mean, on top of those values, we get to make an impact. So I had always worked, you know, in the social sector. I'd always worked in impact. I'd always worked with people. So I said, why don't we actually bring that as a philosophy to the work that we're doing and be very intentional about the type of investments that we make? And so it took, honestly, a lot of study. It took a lot of, like, research, understanding that this was something that was growing. And I actually remember, like, so my parents are on the board of the family office, obviously. We are more, you know, tied to the day-to-day operations. But we all had to be in agreement with the philosophy and the thesis that we were going to take as a family office. And so I remember telling my dad, okay, we're going to do impact investing. And he was like, but I don't understand. We do a lot of philanthropy. Like, what's the difference, you know? And I think there is a really strong nuance from philanthropy being very donation based, and you sort of you get donations on a rolling basis and then you do what you can, but you're sort of limited always. And really the focus isn't about making a profit, but like making an impact in a different way. And I think those organizations need to exist and continue to exist for certain reasons. But really explaining to him that there is a balance between impact and the, you know, short and long-term impact that a company can have and the profitability of that company. Mm-hmm. And really the understanding that these two should and must come hand in hand, and that it actually leads to the sustainability and the long-term of a company in itself. And I think, I mean, that's super exciting to think about. And I mean, I've spoken to a lot of different impact investors, and we talk about how impact investing should just become investing. It should become the new philosophy, the new strategy. When we sort of led that and like understood and explained it to the rest of the group, we understood, okay, how do we do that? How do we bake that in? How do we even approach being an impact investor or a good impact investor? I think impact investing is defined so broadly by so many people, and understanding that you can't do it all. You can't solve it all. You can't touch on it all. But if you focus on the things that make you an expert in whatever areas, or at least your analysis of impact in whatever ways that you can, part of your due diligence, I think that's the best that you can do, and you can continuously encourage yourself to grow and like to push your own limits as what it means to be an impact investor. So, yeah, I mean, we touched on impact, we pushed it, we made it part of our due diligence. We had certain strategies. Now we brought on different team members that are specialized and experts in impact, and it became really a journey that we grew and we continue to grow. And so, I mean, we don't do it perfectly. I don't think anyone does. Mm-hmm. But it's about understanding that, you know, your intention is really there, mm-hmm. and focusing and working on that. I guess second part of your question that you asked is sort of how did my perception of impact change? So I should mention that, so in early 2019, I had the opportunity to hire Sophie Duret, who is sort of our impact expert, and she's been an investor in the venture capital space for about 12 years, and really she was such an expert in understanding impact and how to measure that impact. And you know, her and I sort of in a true sort of design thinking or human-centered design approach sat together and did a full brainstorm, and we said, what can we sort of do? And I was like, There's got to be something with the background that I have and the background that she has. So we created something called Le Studio, which we like to call a venture studio as a service, so VSAS. That's sort of the terminology that we've created. But really understanding that we could support our companies in a way that was much more intentional. So we had always said, okay, we want to be hands-on investors. But by having a model that was both efficient and strategic, we could really do that. So with the studio, essentially, we support our companies and other companies and funds and, you know, the larger ecosystem, I would say, in a couple different capacities, but around three core focus areas. So design. So that's an opportunity that I got to bring design back into my everyday, which was amazing. So everything from problem framing to product market fit, pitching, storytelling, branding. The second big pillar was impact. And I think that was the best learning opportunity for everyone, including myself. So monitoring, tracking, reporting your impact and how to do that in a company. And the last area was financial advisory, outside of financial support. When to raise, how to raise, how does that look like? What do your P&Ls look like and where can we support you? So with Le Studio, it was amazing because we got to work really closely with our founders. Mm-hmm. We got to work with them on a regular basis. Of course, never imposed on them, but you know, we always welcome sort of them wanting to work with us. And one of the workshops that we get asked most about is about impact, how to track, how to report, where do you even start? What do these strategies look like? And we have a couple of different strategies that we really push. But it was interesting. You asked me the changes. I think I always thought, you know, everyone's thinking about this, but it's not the case, you know, and I think there is a distinction between wanting to be an impactful company and wanting to actually measure and monitor your impact. And often companies think that it comes much later, but by working with them, I think we've been able to convince a lot more of our companies understanding that if you bake impact strategies into the early stages of your company, into the inception, into the mission statement, into understanding what your value chain looks like and all those different aspects, you can actually push the impact of your company in a way that's a lot more exponential, and understanding that you start at a certain point, at a certain baseline, and you can actually increase and really push those targets to be a lot more impact focused. So I think there was a shift for us. I mean, really understanding that, letting that become part of our philosophy. And actually, honestly, most of our companies that are doing really, really well are the ones that are actually measuring, monitoring, tracking their impact in a way that's a lot more intentional. And so, I mean, there is such a strong correlation that I think took some convincing on the rest of the team, but it was amazing and it was very obvious.
You know, you said like you think that impact investing should just become investing. And I think that I've heard, you know, the same thing, social entrepreneurship should just become entrepreneurship. And so I think it's kind of a, you know, it goes hands in hand. So I think it's super interesting. And I love how, you know, you were able with the studio to kind of bring back design, you know, by the back door, but then putting it, you know, on the front. So that's super, super nice. So I'd like to follow up with another probably last questions is like, you know, any social entrepreneur, innovator is always looking for funding, you know, and it seems too obvious that investors like you matter. But I'd love to have your perspective, especially because of, you know, your diverse background and experience working with social organizations and communities. What do you think is the role of investors like you for creating social impact? I heard, you know, you talking about like how you think that you can move a needle to getting, you know, more impact. But I'd love your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mentioned we're very lucky to be in this position, because I do think investors have a unique opportunity here. I mean, in a way, what an investor decides to invest in is what gets funded and what gets to grow and what gets to create not only a short, but eventually a long-term impact, right? Because it becomes sustainable. So in a way, an investor, when I say move the needle, like you get to lead trends. You get to, you know, you get to be, you know, you're not necessarily doing the work, but you're definitely funding it and promoting it. And I mean, with the studio, we get to support that work even, and, you know, create those platforms even more so. So I think there is not only a unique opportunity, but a responsibility on the investor side to be very conscious and be very deliberate about the types of investments that we do. And I think, you know, funding is one thing, and it's honestly one of the most important things. But another piece of what an investor, really the role should be, if you're not necessarily a super hands-on investor, but you're essentially should be the champion of the company. You should be the one promoting it, you know. Of course, that being said, like you've done your study, you've done your due diligence, you've understood what the company is about, but like you have to understand that what you get to fund has an opportunity to create a long-term impact. I mean, and you know, and you can add that value in a very intentional way. And I think if you know, I always kind of reflect on like what's sort of lacking in the sort of startup investor ecosystem and where do those opportunities lie. And I mean, being based in Silicon Valley, like we have sort of like very close eyes on everything, but there are definitely gaps that the investors can play and you know, and certain roles that they can sort of fulfill. But like already, I think there's a problem sometimes with awareness or advocacy around certain issues. And again, when you get to fund a project, you get to be sort of that champion. You get to promote it in any way that's possible. But essentially, promoting these companies creates sort of a ripple effect of education and awareness. I think that's super important. I think supporting the infrastructure and the ecosystem. You know, if you think about it, in the U.S., actually, it's kind of the best breeding ground because it's really made easy for startups to take out loans, to, you know, to get set up, to have certain, I mean, you have specific banks that are focused on the startup ecosystem that are willing to take a bit more risk and things like that. But I think, and as an investor, again, continuing to be that champion to support that ecosystem, to understand that it's all interconnected and that if you want to have that impact and think about that impact, what you champion, what you create has a full kind of cycle that you need to think about. And I mean, it's I mentioned this yesterday when we had a conversation with your students, but entrepreneurs, like you mentioned, are becoming, like social entrepreneurs are just becoming entrepreneurs. And I think you can see it with consumers. I mean, there's an increased sort of awareness and like consciousness that consumers are taking. I think it was like TechCrunch that had an article about this, but like essentially, I mean, you're looking at okay, we have this new generation. Our world and our planet are clearly in trouble, and we need to be very deliberate about what we're doing and what we're supporting. And so investors need to be clued into that. They're, you know, consumers themselves, but also they need to, you know, they're leading the way and you know, being sort of these champions, and they need to take an active role in that. So I think that there's an amazing opportunity there to empower our consumers, to increase awareness, and to understand that it doesn't just stop at philanthropy, but it should continue into entrepreneurship and into innovation and social innovation. And, you know, there's a lot of noise. So it's about filtering out that noise, being very conscious about what you're specifically investing in. I know you wanted me to give a couple examples of some of the companies.
Yes. I was like, I'm going to ask her.
So I'll give sort of two examples of one of our companies that's a lot more, that's been around for a lot longer, that has raised a bunch of rounds. But one of them is Thrive Market. So Thrive Market is essentially, it's a platform, it's a grocery platform, but that creates sort of access to healthy food in a much more affordable way. So it's I'd like to describe it as, which I don't know if it's official or should I ever say this, but Costco meets Whole Foods. So, and they have a full transparency with, you know, whatever you're purchasing, you understand which labels are on it, like fair trade, organic, gluten-free, whatever it is. So first of all, it has created increased awareness for the consumer to understand what they're purchasing. It's made healthy food that's often very expensive, extremely accessible, especially in consuming in bulk. You consume it for your family and then you sort of don't have an excuse. But the coolest thing about this is eventually Thrive Market, actually right before I think we invested, or just as we were investing, started their own private label. And it was actually amazing because they're very intentional about optimizing sort of relationships with producers. So making sure there was equal opportunity, making sure there was transparency in the way they were working, making sure, you know, they understood where that they were sourcing locally and different things like that. And then the packaging, even though their shipping packaging sometimes is on the more excessive side, but I think they're very conscious about understanding how to change those things and really what they've done just in bringing healthy food to, I mean, let's talk about the American right now, but the general American across the U.S. is extremely amazing and important. So that's one of our companies, and I think it's so cool to understand, like, they've really shaped the way people have access to food, and they're continuously growing, and I mean, the whole aspect is, like, it's become a pleasure to shop for healthy food, and I think it's sort of reimagining that is amazing, because you understand, again, like, impact isn't only quantitative change, but it's qualitative change. So understanding how you impact communities. I mean, this is communities that have access to ordering food, but still, it's a step up from what was there. And another example of a company I'll give is this company called Evernew. So E-V-R-N-U. And they're based in Seattle. And the two co-founders worked in the apparel industry for a very long time. They were at DuPont and they met at Nike. And they always realized, okay, the apparel industry is really one of the largest pollutants, and it's really unfortunate. But, you know, with fast fashion and things where you're like, you're just literally like, you're made to just enjoy a piece for like, I don't know, a short amount of time and then just dispose of it and forget that it's actually part of a much larger ecosystem and then ends up in landfills and everything else. They were like, what can we reimagine and how can we create a much healthier ecosystem when it comes to apparel and the fashion industry? So what they did is they ended up taking donated cotton pieces, extracting dyes out of them, and then going through pulping mills and having their own, you know, R&D fully developed around this, but essentially taking a cotton t-shirt or any piece and completely turning into a liquid form and then recreating out of that a new filament. It's amazing. I mean, it's really insane, like the technology around this. And the idea is that really it's like a full cycle loop kind of thing. So understanding that you can actually go through four full consumer life cycles. So in a sense, this new filament has been put into new fabrics.
But it can go four.
Exactly. It can be recycled and repurposed four times. Wow. And so understanding that it doesn't just die after it's used once. And then partnering with larger brands like Levi's, Stella McCartney, Adidas, and Target, and understanding like, okay, our impact actually starts now and it's short term, but actually can be much more long term. And I think, you know, being part of companies like this and getting so excited and talking about them. I know I talk about a lot of our biotech companies too, but like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're really at an opportunity and it's your responsibility because you have this incredible platform and you should leverage it and use it.
One word that I kept you talking about is like intention, deliberate. And I think that's so important. And then the other one, which, you know, might be for people, although ecosystem is kind of a buzzword, mm-hmm. but the way you've been talking about it is really about, yeah. you know, relationships mm-hmm. and kind of thinking about like impact as interdependence mm-hmm. rather than, completely. You know, competition. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, for someone who does investing, yeah. it's like, it's really, you know, surprising, but also mm-hmm. Shows how, you know, it also creates like a need for a shift in how we think about relationships and totally. Impact in the innovation world.
Totally.
I'd like to thank you because you came, you know, from a long way to Lisbon to spend this week with us as our second social innovator in residence. I know the students enjoyed it, all our partners too, and I enjoyed it. You know,
we've been
talking so long. So it's been, you know, really wonderful to have you and super stimulating. And I, you know, I know we're going to keep talking together. Yeah, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I mean, I've loved being here and getting to meet the students and meet everyone. It's been incredible.
So I'm sure we'll keep talking.
Yes. Do some collaboration.
Yes, definitely. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Design Thinking Roundtable, produced by the DESIS Lab at Nova SBE in partnership with the Design Lab at NYU Makerspace. This podcast was recorded at Fidelidad Creative Studio. If you think this episode may be of interest for someone in your community, please share it. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.